Okay, this is board time, Wednesday, October 21st at precisely 1:30.
Okay, thank you. Welcome. One of the responsibilities of the board chair is to ensure that our meetings start on time. And I really enjoyed the, what they call it, Jurassic parliamentarian presentation. And they say that the board fails to do the job if it doesn't speak up and say, you know, we should get here on time.
So, Mr. Chair, may I add that also means it should finish on time.
I like on time.
Ooh,
and I
ooh, right in the heart.
Oh, got me.
More
so,
than one.
So, yes, I agree. Thank you very much. So, we'll be prompt. We're going to be all of us do more better. Okay, so thank you.
And first, you're including yourself in that.
Absolutely.
That's what I was talking about.
You got to lead by example, or otherwise, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. It didn't apply, right? Okay, the first item on the list is 1.1, approval of minutes for October 14. Is there a motion?
Chair, I'd like to make a motion that we approve the minutes of October 14, 2015.
Okay, is there a second?
Yes.
Any discussion? Okay, hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay, motion passes. The October 14 minutes have been approved. New business. I don't see any bullet points there, so I assume we move on to 3.0, councilor reports. And who would like to lead? I see one name there, but no topic, so you have the floor.
I had to get copies for the topic. So this is in connection with what we've talked about.
Thank you.
Either.
Oh, there's more than one? Oh, one for...
No, just make sure everybody has one. So,
keep past it. Pass the potatoes.
This is in the discussion about the 2% property tax rollback. In addition to some of what we talked about this morning with some needs that are unmet. I've thought about it and thought about it. Is there, if the goal would be to give the taxpayer the greatest benefit of consideration of a 2% reduction, or another possibility could be, instead of reducing the tax, the property tax by 2%, put 2% of the existing property tax to better use. And better use would be finding a long-term benefit for the citizens with that. So if we took the 1.2 per year and applied it to our debt for our two buildings, this chart shows what the potential savings by accelerating the payoff of our debt would be. So I just thought it's an interesting chart, and I think it should be one more way. If what we're trying to do is benefit the citizens, if we could benefit them not by $7 or $8 a year or less than $100 a year, but we by paying down the debt, the interest that we would save is substantial. So the chart here shows the, in the dark blue, the principal outstanding. The green is the revised principal outstanding. And when we look at the purple, it's the interest and the revised interest. So you can see incrementally how much difference it makes each year. So I'm throwing that out for discussion and consideration. because 1.2 million a year, which is that 2%, applied against our long-term debt has, well, it's 4.3 million savings in interest by decreasing the outstanding principal. So it's another, if there's an interest in finding added benefit for the citizens, it would be like you have credit card debt and you can never get at the principal part of your credit card debt because the interest accrues so much.
Yes.
And this isn't, of course, at the same rate that credit card debt is, because when we sell the bonds, we make sure it's better negotiated. But just the same, any time we could focus on reducing long-term debt, because as that declines and the debt of the interest declines, that's the same as a kicker in the budget. It gives us more flexible money for general fund. So I think this is a suggestion worthy of discussion.
Well, first of all, thank you very much for introducing this. I'm very happy to have one more example of that this board is interested in minimizing debt and getting out from underneath debt. And that is a message in the right direction that says that we're investing in the future, not borrowing from the future. And I think we're all on board when it comes to that. In fact, because we are on board because of that, we've already done that by a factor of four times of that. $4.4 million we've already paid off this year early in debt that we didn't have to. We already applied that. And the concern that you expressed earlier of wanting to ensure that our sheriff's department, that we continue to rebuild the sheriff's department, we've already added 22 or 21 new positions there, including 8 new officers, and yet the process isn't done. We still need to be able to rebuild our sheriff's office, to strengthen them, to ensure that they have the backup and the boots out in the field and those individuals, to ensure that we prioritize law enforcement and public safety. However, the intent is not to simply cut revenue. That's not been the intent. In fact, that's kind of a disadvantage of any time we consider any kind of a property, any kind of a tax cut, whether it be sales tax cut or property tax. That's not the intent. In fact, that's a disadvantage. So understand my goal, that I can only speak for myself, is not to cut revenue. That's not the purpose. That's kind of a disadvantage. What it is instead is to ensure that with that track record of already paying off early debt, with that track record of already building our reserves, of becoming more financially sound and having achieved all of these improvements that we have over the last several years, we're very aware that this community we have either a competitive advantage or disadvantage or mediocrity when it comes to all the other communities. The creation, there's two ways that we can think of, and it's an ideological kind of a thing that separates individuals. One is that the view that the only way that revenue can be increased for local government is to somehow raise tax rates. The other view is that if our community is more competitive and more business friendly than other communities, then we will become a destination for those that are looking for relief, and they can create new wealth. Instead of taking a bigger slice of the pie can be made bigger, not by us, but by the free enterprise that naturally gravitates to a more business friendly environment. Part of this is also, in a way, it's kind of sending the right message to those that are looking for relief. We have so much of a brain drain going on in California. So many businesses are fleeing that state for one reason. They're being taxed to death, and they're being regulated to death, and they're looking for relief. And if we were to lower our property taxes by 2%, and granted, it's not a whole lot, if we were to accomplish that, then one of the we send a very visible message that says nowhere on the West Coast and nowhere in the history of Washington State has any community that I'm aware of, any county, lowered their property taxes. And those individuals, those businesses, those entrepreneurs that are looking for a government that's moving in the right direction, attractor, the repellent that they have there, they're looking for the opposite here, that says Clark County is unique. Clark County is moving in the right direction. We welcome wealth creators that grow the revenue pie bigger, that lightens the load for everybody, rather than us trying to take a bigger slice of a pie that naturally makes the pie smaller. So yes, we're on the same page for debt relief. We've done that, and we want to continue to look for opportunities. And no, we don't want to cut our revenue for our county. It's still going to increase substantially. Sales tax revenue up by 15%. Construction sales tax revenue up by 25% over the last year. All that new construction that's going on will add new property tax revenue without raising rates. So all of that revenue is flowing into this as a result of the entrepreneurs and the businesses and those individuals that consider this is a much more citizen-friendly, business-friendly community to land in and to grow. So the opportunity to do what you're doing, what you're suggesting here, I think is good, and I support the idea of looking for those specific ways that we can accomplish that. But the overall competitiveness that have been so instrumental in our success so far, to go from lagging the rest of the state like we were several years ago to being the leading, fastest growing jobs community in Washington State, what I don't want to compromise. I still want to send that signal. That's only my personal opinion on it.
But the growth in Clark County is coming at the natural time that it should, whether the three of us were here or not. Clark County was always poised in the perfect location for really exponential growth. So how much of the growth is because of policies created by this board? I think we need to keep ourselves in perspective. On the property tax issue, the change in property tax, it's steeper than incremental in the effect it has on the general fund, because it does affect some other kinds of property tax. I see your point that we have other revenue sources like sales tax that are increasing. So the revenue from sales tax is increasing, and it is because more goods are being sold, and there are some other peripheral reasons for that. So, but we're just trading parts of the budget, and sales tax is a far less stable revenue source than property tax is. So I think this is a sound idea, and I know some of this work has already been done of paying off debt. And to me, that is the best way to use money because it frees up general fund money to prevent unnecessary tax increases in of any kind. So the other thing, it's what it offers is what really has to be only a one-time perk or incentive for the citizens, and it sounds bigger than it actually is. So I think a lot of people look at their tax bill and go, well, thank goodness at least it'll go down 2%, where we all know that's not the reality of what's going to happen because their total tax bill is really combined. So offering, it's not, it leads people to believe that the budget is so fat that we could easily cut 2%, and that it doesn't hurt, and that nothing is lost because of it. And to me, that is the fallacy of it, is my concern about that. So, a legacy would be to take 2% and put it aside, not necessarily in an account with no flexibility, and not specifically earmark it, but set it aside to accrue in an account that can retire bond debt. That really is the very best outcome for the citizens, is not having the ongoing interest debt. That also improves our bonding capacity for the future if we need to, so that based on our credit status, which is very good and all that, to accelerate payment down of this if we needed to bond in the future, which I think do as much cash as possible, or managing the biennium as much as possible for some capital costs is the best idea, but it gives greater flexibility for our future bonding, and it shows greater flexibility for the general fund.
Okay. I'm going to, in a minute, Tom, invite you into the conversation. I just wanted to respond
to
one,
nice.
one thing first. I'm thanks for being patient, Tom. I just one thing. You started out, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but there are a number of citizens that want that somehow assume that we would have prospered anyway. Our business-friendly policies have nothing to do, or very little to do, with this Clark County moving from lagging the rest of the communities in the state several years ago to being the number one fastest-growing community in the state now. The assumption is that, well, everybody's prospering. It doesn't matter. Our influence is so small, you might as well just not, pay attention to it.
Yeah, that would be putting words in my mouth.
And what I'm saying is that you kind of conveyed some of what other citizens are saying, and that is that everybody's booming, and with that, I just want to refer to our perspective. Our perspective is provided by the State Department of Employment Security Division. Our regional economist, Scott Bailey, he released his quarterly report, or his monthly report for September yesterday. And in that report, he normally includes Clark County, Cowlitz County, and Wakayankum County. And he, for some reason, I don't know why, but he picks those three, Cowlitz being our next door neighbor, and he graphs their job or their employment numbers to all three of those. And what that information clearly shows is that there's something very, very different about Clark County. We are taken off like a rocket with his graph, and I just love to see that show up each month in comparison to the other two graphs that show what other counties are doing. They are not anywhere near what we are doing. They used to call him, they used to joke in years past, just not very many years ago, Dr. Doom and Gloom, because his forecast for Clark County was, get used to it, you're going to be lagging the state, and that's just your future that you can look forward to. Something changed, and I cannot say for sure that it was because of our business-friendly policies that we welcome business, we welcome new wealth creators, and we're doing as best we can to roll out the red carpet to entrepreneurs and businesses. But I can tell you we did, and this is not the time to somehow reverse course. We are different. We are unique, and I look to our regional economists to draw that contrast. We've gone from the back of the economic race, our car in that race, to leading the pack by several laps in the economic race. Bonding capacity is a really important thing we want to pay attention to. If I understand the input from our finance team, we've got as high a rating as any county can reasonably be expected to have. And that is something that saves us interest rates in interest payments, debt service into the future. So our solid financial state, where we have, not only do we have uncommitted reserves that are right on target and exceeding the target, but we also have long-term permanent reserves on top of that that has been established over the last couple of years. So with that, I'll pass it to Tom. I've talked long enough. Thanks, Tom.
All right. I think what stimulated this is the same thing that stimulated me, is that the proposed budget that was given to us this morning kind of blew me away when it took 50% of our reserves to spend during a supplemental budget. It's just not acceptable. I was going back and saying, well, what other things can we do? This would be a good idea if we had the money to do it. We don't have the money to do this anymore under the current proposed budget. So I kind of went a different route. And I'll hand some of these out here. I was out looking for some dollars.
I haven't.
Oh, okay.
Need another one. And so I went back, and I was aware that we had vacant positions, and a lot of them were already in the current budget. So it's kind of an example. In the mail room, we have a budget of so many FTEs, but I could have two empty positions in there. And that mailroom's budget included in their budget the money for two extra FTEs. So what I did, I went back and I looked at all those vacancies and found out those that were given money in their budget, but they didn't have the individual there, and they've been vacant at least since January this year, which indicates to me that it must not be critical that we have that position. So I'd like to propose that we pull those unfilled positions that are funded back to the general fund as one step. So far this year, we have filled 36 of those vacancies already.
So you want to defund these positions?
I want to take them back because they're not being used.
Well, that, and we take them back by defunding them.
Yeah.
Well, would that, Counselor, would that be represented in what Adriana was talking about this morning with, you know, every year we have salary savings that's mm-hmm. returned from, you know, on the transition from this year would be 15 to 16. So she always accounts for that, whatever it ends up being, $3.2 million. And I wonder if like if you had a budgeted funded position that went unfilled since January, if that's part of that savings or not. I'd have to ask her about it.
No. Well, we have some here that are unfunded. The unfunded ones are not in the budget. So whatever, here, community services is at the top of the list. They have the position, but it's unfunded. They're not receiving the money in their budget for those two positions. But if I come down in the same department, I have three in a row there for community services that are funded in their budget and are vacant and have been vacant for at least 10 months. So I want to look at taking those back, and it goes back to say the same thing. The 36 vacant spots that we filled the beginning of the year, I wish we would have had a handle on it then, because that is staggering to our existing budget when we add 36 more positions.
Can I ask legal a question?
Certainly.
So, with the charter, now that we have the charter, can you indicate the separation now of the responsibilities? Now, I know we have budget authorization, no sure. question about that. So when I look at a list of staff positions, can you tell me what part of identifying or maintaining staff positions is the county manager side, and which part is just the where we end up with the cost of personnel costs, which is sort of us, and then we work backward from there to figure out how, you know, what's acceptable.
I want to share that in this number, the more accurate number is 23, but there's some more numbers that don't add up for me. So originally we had like 130-something vacant positions, but when I started to pull them out, I came out with these, and then I subtracted those that were in the sheriff's department, because I don't think we do that, and I think that could be the intent, that the sheriff could use that money to train officers.
Well, I don't know how fluid all that is, and I don't know that any of us here know how fluid that is, but so can you draw the lines here of authority and responsibility?
Sure. Well, let me start out and see if I can go follow a logical path that'll get you where you want to be. I think that as you pointed out, under the charter, the board does have budget authority, and the charter has allocated both CFO authority, chief financial officer, and executive and administrative authority to the county manager, and allocated to him the authority to hire the directors, who in turn are allocated authority to hire the people under him, under them. But even with that break in the authority that the charter allocates, is still the authority of the board to set budgets. And I'll use as a good example, it's an interesting case, and it goes a different way, but I think it'll be clear what the point is. It was actually Douglas County, the prosecutor wanted to have a remote office, and at one point the board got upset about that and thought the only office he should have or she should have should be in the county seat, and so they refused to pay for it. The prosecutor sued the county commissioners, and when it wound its way up through the Court of Appeals, the court came back and actually came up with two rulings, both of which are pertinent. Number one, they said that once the budget of a particular elected official is set, the board can't second guess that budget. So they can't question how a particular elected official spends their money, but they do absolutely have the authority to do a supplemental budget and take the money away. And so the court recognized that if the board wanted to reduce the amount of money that a prosecutor or any elected official could spend, that the commissioners had the authority in that case, but having allocated a particular budget, they couldn't in that case say how the money was spent. So as applied to this case, the charter doesn't make the county manager an elected position, but even if it did, that would still be the case, and I think the board could defund positions if they chose to. And so in answer to what I think is where you're asking, the question about whether or not in light of the charter we can just, in the middle of a budget year, defund positions, I believe the board has the legal authority to do that. It may be one you want to talk to the departments, because if they're imminent, if those are positions that are imminently due to be filled, it could create some problems, but ultimately that's your call.
Well, and so the part of it that makes me uncomfortable, and I understand cost savings, okay, so is the manager worked with his department heads. They submitted their budgets. Mm-hmm. He gave them approval to do what they've done. So it feels a little bit undermining, even if we have authority, to want to sit here today and pick these off without knowing the whole set of circumstances. So that's the part that makes me uncomfortable is, you know, I don't know exactly how to read this, but I get the drift of it. But I wouldn't feel comfortable creating a policy decision here right now without finding out more about what these positions are and if they can be removed without causing jeopardy to functioning departments. So,
if I could add just a little bit, we have a culture here at the county that I think is very, very healthy. If a department is given $1 million in controllables budget, and because they're fiscally prudent and efficient, they spend $700,000, we don't go and take the $300,000 away. It'll roll back to them in the next budget cycle. What will happen is, if you take the $300,000 away, if you take away vacant positions, that will create pressure to use it, or they know it's going to go away. And that pressure does not exist in this county, and that's why we have managers in the county that turn savings back. And it's because they keep positions vacant, they are very efficient in using their controllables budget. Because when you get to the end of a biennium, you really don't want to crash into the ceiling. You want to have a buffer so that you can finish the biennium well within your budget.
And look like a hero to turn it back.
The assessor did.
So if you harvest all these and you harvest all the controllables budget, the culture in this county will change. And
well,
people will
what do they do with it?
Pardon?
So if they have $300,000 they didn't spend, what do they do with it?
That was my point. It's a zero-sum game.
So if they don't need $300,000 this year and they don't need $300,000 next year, what did they do with it?
Well, at each biennium, it rolls back to the county. That's part of the money that's shown.
Yeah. And had, I don't think there's a lot of departments.
Oh, yes, yeah. Yes, it is.
I don't think there's a lot of departments.
No, we reallocated it.
No.
That's how we got it.
It falls to fund balance if you don't spend it.
Yeah, it comes back. That's the 3.2 we talked about this morning.
Every time Adriana does a budget projection, she takes into account the average vacancy rate, and she computes vacancy savings, and she adds that back into fund balance. If you take these positions away, the vacancy savings will go away, and you end up right where you started.
And
they're still there. All the money.
It doesn't get spent, though.
Budget directors count on it.
Let me finish. When you're done, I'll take a turn.
They're already operating. They're 10 months into the year cycle, and they have this leftover money. Now, I didn't go back. I would be willing to bet that these are over a year old, maybe 2 years. Because when we looked at the original deal, we had 158. We filled 36 of them the first of the year, and that reduced down on my new chart. The numbers don't match up. I should have more vacancies than this. Mm-hmm. But taking away that money, it just says you don't have any slough money because these same people just came back and asked for more money. Want me to name them? We just had the budget. We just had it this morning.
Go ahead.
What sheriff's office? He's got a whole list here, unfilled. So, community development, still asking for money, unfilled positions. So I think that's my budget call. I mean, when you turn around and take 50% of my reserves in a supplemental budget, the supplementary budget is supposed to pay for those things, unforeseen and surprised things that come forward to you. It's not a one-year budget. It's a biennial budget. Yeah. You're an accountant. Explain that to me.
I might mention also that we go from, I think it was $24.8 million fund balance at the beginning of 2015. We end the biennium with $23.2 million. So fund balance is dropping by $1.6 million over the biennium, and we still have $23 million in reserves. So we're not using half of our reserves in this readopt. Not,
yeah, we started off with 56.
Pardon?
We started off with 56.
No, we didn't. No, we didn't. I'll go get the briefing package if you'd like me to.
Adriana and I was talking, and the term that she used it as a 26 day reserve is the minimum that we keep, and we have about 56, 57.
We have switched
today
from days to a dollar.
To a dollar.
We're no longer talking days.
Mm-hmm. That was just going to give him the budget that was in the presentation from this morning.
So that 2.1 in salary savings,
we're reducing
is where
to 23.3.
The vacant position.
So we're reducing our reserves by 1.5 out of 25.
So you're telling me 26 days is only.
It's not days, sir. It's million.
Well, I'm comparing.
If
56 days is equivalent to so many million, what is 26 equivalent to?
We're not using days anymore. Our new fund balance policy.
You convert it from days to dollars, right?
Okay.
Sure.
Well, this
so many days represent so many dollars.
I can't tell you that. I'd have to talk to Mark Gassaway. But if this is 56 days, this is like 53 days.
Well, if it was 58 days.
Yes, but that's not what she told me. So maybe we weren't on the same queue, but
let
me go back and talk
about that. That might be the case.
But my question, I still come back to the same thing. Not all departments have vacant positions. Some do, some don't. I see it.
No, all I was going to say is the 2.1, when you were asking what happens to that money, this is the 2.1 million represents unspent money on positions that weren't filled last year. So it just rolls back into the general fund for you to reallocate.
Right. And I think what it is that the managers today, if they have that vacant spot, they either fill that position or come to you to fill that position.
Right. But if a position has been unfilled for 2 years, I will question the director.
Yeah. But
pretty vigorously.
You show there it was $2.7 million of return. What's wrong with me keeping that return until it's requested from the department?
You could choose to do that, but it gets you nowhere because you can give someone $2 million in budget that they don't spend, or you can take that budget away and they don't spend it. And you're in the same exact place.
Well, when the sheriff comes back and asks for another deputy, I say, sure, here's your money back. But I don't sit there and hold it in place and then turn around and tell the counselors, hey, you're in trouble with your budget.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Could I hear from one of the other two counselors?
Yeah. is this a good time?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
It was just another idea like Amy said.
Well, first, I think we should always welcome possible potential ways to identify savings and ask the questions, is what about this pot? What about this means? And that's so. Councillor Stewart has done that.
Did we ever finish that conversation?
Well, this is kind of morphing. This is basically identifying savings and budget. What do you do with the budget? And so, Tom, I'm addressing his version of being wise financially. I understand there are limitations when it comes to the charter. We don't necessarily, would not be appropriate for us to be able to say, well, you eliminate this position. But instead, we can. What we do have is we have budget authority that includes FTE counts, and we do have the authority to appropriate a certain amount of budget. And if we work with our manager to say, you know, we see as a basis for us to be able to identify savings, a means that we can reasonably cut that department because we see this is at least one way that department has vacancies. They haven't filled. They likely won't fill. And we don't necessarily want them to fill unless there's a compelling case to do so. And then that's a basis that we can apply in the discretion, whether or not that's the particular means that you're going to use to realize those savings or not is up to the manager. So that respects the division of the executive and the legislative branch. We also have the point, I think, that Councillor Mielke brings is a very good one. And to me, there is a distinction between the FTE potential budget that's sitting there in each department as unfilled FTEs. That's used up the capacity for FTEs when it comes to the real FTEs that could potentially fund new sheriff deputies. We're saying no to this new sheriff deputies because we can't identify the savings because we haven't identified the savings. The potential savings are here. And so at this point, what I would suggest, Mark, is that first of all, we don't know what we don't know. But I know this, that there's a potential opportunity here that's been identified by Councillor Mielke. And it would be appropriate for us to be able to sit down with you and to walk through this and help us understand what can we and what can we do that would be appropriate to identify these savings.
Okay. I'd be happy to sit down with anyone to talk about this, but let me make one more point. Eliminating budget saves you nothing. Eliminating the spending is what saves you. So if you take unfilled positions and allocate them to the sheriff for deputies, he's going to fill them. So instead of having vacancy savings with unfilled positions, you are now going to incur costs by hiring deputies that you wouldn't have hired otherwise.
I'm guessing something a little bit different. I'm guessing if I go talk to the sheriff, he's going to say it appears that we're in the hiring process because we authorized 8 new deputies. They may not be showing up here yet, and they may be in training or they may be in school. So that's something you have to ask them. But he sat right there today and didn't deny that he can always use more sheriff, more deputies.
Right.
Here they are, right?
Yeah, he's losing them at about the same rate he's bringing them on. So
yeah.
He's treading water.
And that has
these are
with
10
exhaustion.
Months old. Minimum of 10 months.
And we gave him 8 deputy positions about 10 months ago.
So the question I would have when I would look at this is a department as small as DES has 3 positions for a total of $18,000 a month if they were filled. And I don't know how such a small department could have so many reserved high-paying positions. So some of the other departments are much bigger, but that's the one that sort of popped up for me. So I don't think we can just jump on any conclusions from looking at this sheet. I think we need to think about it.
That's good. I agree, because when I go back and when we were talking about lowering property tax by 2%, but when I see all these vacancies, that represents my 2%.
Once again,
but it's something to look at.
No argument there.
Yeah.
No argument
yeah.
there. But a budgeted position that's unfilled doesn't cost us a dime.
It's floating out there
until it
comes back to us, or we can use it to pay off debt, or we can use it to hire a deputy. But absolutely, it's floating out there until it's used.
So at this point, if you're done?
Yeah.
Okay. Certainly the balance here is not to jump to conclusions and say they're gone. They would not be appropriate. That'd be one extreme. The other extreme is for us to just not even look and don't even consider it. The balance here is to have the conversation with you and go over these one by one and say, hey, Mr. County Manager, help us understand here the opportunities and potentially explore savings. It is true that if you don't spend the money because it's vacant, you're saving it. I think we understand that. However, the budget that is applied, that is a certain dollar amount to each department, includes temporary employees, project employees, that is not somehow that's not even on here, and vacant positions. Those are some portion of vacant positions that's already included in the budget. Whether or not we spend it, if they don't fill those positions, we save it. But it's in the budget. So when we look at upholding our financial principles that says we have reserves set aside, we have that reserve is much smaller because we've already allowed that to be capacity granted each of these departments. So the ability for us to be able to say what's more real, and let's make sure that it's we can apply some of that potentially so we can accomplish the higher profile needs like the sheriff deputies. Those conversations, we don't have that right now. And I'm thankful for this because this is a conversation that would help that potentially realize some savings and help us to accomplish something more.
So I might add, my numbers are probably off in my haste. I wanted to present this today because we had the proposed budget this morning. But in my earlier study, we had 158 unfilled positions, and we used 36 of them the first part of the year. That left 122 unfilled positions. I'm not quite sure how far they could have changed because this represents only 36.
Yeah.
Something that needs to be looked at.
So I would say, in addition to this, what these actual permanent positions are, we also have a certain amount that's budgeted for temporary employees for each department, and a certain amount that's also added to that department for project positions that are neither one of those are on here. And that money is budgeted. So it subtracts from our responsible, what we look and say, well, we can't afford sheriff deputies because somehow it's less. So a more realistic, more accurate accounting of what can be expected, what's likely to be appropriate for each department, I think would be, this is more of a ground truthing is what we're asking for here. The other point that you raised, Mark, is that somehow the normal human nature that we can expect that would happen is if we take the reward away from people's saving budget, that they're going to change their culture and they're going to no longer do that. They're going to spend it because they don't want to lose it. I'm thinking that may happen elsewhere and that may happen here sometimes depending upon who the director is of that department. But I can say it should not happen here, not if we have the right kind of character that makes up each of our each of those directors in each department, because they're responsible for, just like you are and like we all are, to create a culture that doesn't do that. The culture that says we're here to do the best job we can with what we have and not to somehow war against that because we want more for our department when we know it's not about us. It's about us providing services in the best way possible. So I'm hoping that culture somehow the bar gets lower and lower until everybody spends as much as they can spend so that they spend it, lose it, or use it, or lose it, doesn't happen here.
No, I wouldn't expect it to. I'm just making a point. I've been in many organizations in my professional life, and where the environment is, if you don't use it, you lose it, inevitably that mentality begins to creep in. Now, the mission, vision, values statement I've asked you to support on multiple occasions, that will help cement the environment that I would like to create here.
Thanks for the reminder.
So this is the fourth time now I've put it in front of you. I really would like your support on that document.
I don't have it in front of me today, but I do have it on my desk.
And yes, we inculcate our new employees with those values, and we'll seek to ensure that they embrace them and follow them.
Yes. Well, you know, sometimes I get the feeling your institutional culture is one thing, and we're talking about that. Although our responsibility as a board is to make sure that the money is managed prudently and responsibly, as are the budgets, as is the operations in the overview. I sometimes get the feeling that the culture of this board is that staff is incompetent and that they need to be second-guessed on just about everything. And I don't think that's a healthy culture for us to bring to the table, that we can do everything better than the staff, and that we're smarter than the staff, and that we don't even really need the staff. Sometimes I get the impression that we underestimate the value of what we have in the staff.
I need to say something here. That is so inappropriate. Yeah, I don't know who you're talking about.
I'm talking about you and Tom.
Okay, that's what I thought you were talking about.
Let me be clear.
And that is inappropriate. If you can identify anything that I have said or Tom has said that has in any way fulfilled the specifics of what you just said, by all means, we need to hear it. But such general criticisms that attack the character and the motives that we have is completely inappropriate. So if, by all means, please do. Because
I think self-reflection, and then I would need to make a list.
Let me finish, please. It is very important that we as counselors here, as leaders, respect each other, and we do not tear each other's character down. We don't pretend we can read each other's motives and impart them to be negative and somehow paint our attitude toward others as something that's dishonorable. That is completely inappropriate. I can speak for myself, and I think in this case I can speak for Tom. Each time that we communicate with staff or about staff has been honorable, respectful, complimentary, that has been our rule. The culture that we portray here, if there be one thing in particular that is responsibility of top-level leadership, which is what we all hold here along with Mark, is that we have to build a culture of positive, get-her-done, successful, encouraging attitudes with each other. And we don't do that by tearing each other down. Please do not impart such motives to my words or attitude towards staff, because if it is true, I need to hear it when it happens. Call me on it when it happens with specifics. But please do not use such generalities to portray this when out of the blue.
Don't put the responsibility on me.
Well, you created that responsibility. If I criticize you with something in general, I owe you the responsibility of something specific that says, and this is what you said, and this is what you did. And if that cannot be substantiated, and I do welcome that, because I am flawed, and I do make mistakes, and if, when I do, I need someone to point it out to me. In the meantime, the respect that we need to show each other is an example that says if we want to respect the staff, we start by respecting each other.
I need to go back a little bit. When we made the big cuts, we eliminated something like 270 positions. 70 were real people. The other were vacant positions. So it's not unusual to go back and re-look at positions that haven't been filled for a long time, and why would that department have those? So especially when we come up and we're saying, hey, we can't afford a 2% cut, or we're going to use this, I think it's part of my job to go back and with staff looking in one place and I'm looking at others. But I haven't been here for a while. I was aware of those vacancies existing. I just didn't know to what extent they existed today. So.
And Tom, I think the question is legitimate, but the presumption when Mark knows this exists, and Mark has offered an explanation, and whether this ties up money or not, that's the question in my mind. Does it tie up money?
Uh-huh.
And he's going to talk to us about that. But to see the specific list, that tells us a whole story about some other things going on.
Well, one thing about Mark's point as well is that, you know, I was a commissioner during the recession when we laid a lot of people off as well. And
this list, while it represents vacant positions, and I don't know what our percentage is, but we have 1,600 people at the county, so somewhere around 10% is probably not uncommon for a vacant position. And I think absolutely the council and Mark should look at ones that have been vacant for a long time. But what has been said in this room before is that this 2% property tax cut wasn't about cutting staff. This will, to people, represent a shift in the tone from the council saying, because these are real positions to real departments and department heads. So that will be a tone shift. We're seeing that way if you start looking at individual positions.
And I definitely want to open up the dialogue with the sheriff or other people that have these and said, why have you not filled it? Do you not need this anymore because we are now doing things differently? You know, we become high-tech in so many different areas that we've been more efficient than we operate today with a couple of hundred less than what we used to operate with. So we have improved and become more efficient. So
and Tom,
hopefully we'll look at it down the way.
With the sheriff's department, well, with law enforcement in general, there can be vacancies that are open for a long time because you can only deal with qualified staff. And you can only deal with people who have a certain level of knowledge and can jump through, you know, can go through a very long, protracted background investigation and all those other things.
I come from a family of law officers, so.
And it's probably harder for our Clark County Sheriff because if when you get a lot of, in law enforcement, people working a lot of overtime, they get exhausted. And people don't necessarily want to jump on board to that organization. So that for the sheriff or any law enforcement, there can be other complications why they're open a long time. Getting somebody into a police academy or law enforcement.
And city police departments tend to have better compensation packages.
There was that, too.
Okay, well, as we go forward, we will bring information relative to these positions to the board. And some will have valid explanations and some may not. And those that we can call, we will.
So I would kind of like to have the opportunity to be part of that. And the reason why is that I'm responsible for the budget. Mm-hmm. So if you want me to be
define
fair.
Define be a part of it, sir, please.
Huh?
Define
well,
for
I would,
me.
I'd like to talk to Sheriff Atkins.
And you want to talk to Vanessa and you want to talk to Peter and
sure.
Marty and okay,
sure.
Well, I'll just okay.
I just want them to explain to me, you know, why, and then I'll probably go a little bit more research and see if it's 10 months or if it's been 2 years. So, yeah, I
okay,
do.
Okay, so
because
this is not a project for me. This
can I?
I'm just trying to.
This can go either positive or negative.
Yeah, I want to put sidebar.
Yeah, I want to make sure it goes positive, Mark. I think what we're what's being communicated here is the desire for a better understanding.
Which we I plan each, to provide.
Yes, and we each need to communicate in a way that we understand better. Tom is expressing that. I'm expressing that, and I think you are also. We want to be able to understand better, and no one is in a better position to gain that understanding than the county manager to have those conversations with each one. But we also want to be part of the all this is about healthy relationships. Relationships says we understand. And at this point, we don't enough. And we'd like to be able to understand better. So I want to be able to, certainly, each one of us, we have the public settings here, we talk about such things, but we also have day-to-day communications with relationships that just helps us to better tune in. And there's no substitute for that. And so I'm encouraging you, look at what the potential is here, what the intent and opportunity is there, and if you understand it already so well because you've had those conversations with them, then help us to understand. Have the conversations with us. And if you don't, then we encourage you to do so. that would be above and beyond for us. We don't have the authority to do that, to actually have, but it would be just healthy relationships for us to be able to do, to be wiser, more informed if we did also. So I encourage that. Communication is a good thing.
Sounds good.
So, Mr. McCauley, if I sat down with you and went over this list, and there were four positions in the assessor's office, would you be able to explain that, or would you have to call the assessor and ask him to come to the meeting and explain it? Some of these you would know about, but out of the other jurisdiction, well, out of the, it's our jurisdiction, but out of the other elected offices, like assessment, sheriff, you might have a closer knowledge of that, but elections, in the prosecuting attorney's office, you wouldn't necessarily know, would you, why they're holding those positions open?
No, not necessarily. And in many cases, absolutely not.
So,
because I don't meddle in the affairs of other elected officials.
So all of these, you wouldn't be able to help us understand better.
No, but I could.
Is that what you meant by, if it's a different elected official, to talk to them?
Yeah, I would talk to every elected official and department director who has positions on this list, and position number by position number, we would have a conversation about each one.
So sometimes after saying that, I bring up the assessors. I wonder how good my information is that I got off of our website, because I think the assessor is one who has converted those positions to other positions. And I think that he might be asking for another position back or something. So this information might be a little bit older than I thought, even though it's current on our website.
Well, this is our position control spreadsheet, and as people leave and as people join the county, we have a person down there who takes the information, and with a very short lag time, like Axel's position on Friday will appear as vacant because tomorrow is his last day. This is pretty fresh information.
No, I'm talking about the assessor. We knew the assessor gave back position.
Right. But
so
the
you
minute,
think he still has four?
The minute somebody joins the county, they fill out a personal action form that goes to HR, and Jeremy Hamrich or Daniel Harrigan sits down and updates the spreadsheet. So if they show is vacant, you already owe me one lunch. I'll bet you another one.
I'll bet you another one that assessor doesn't have four empty spots.
Well, if we end this shortly, we can go down and verify.
We will, okay.
You could double down on that, Tom.
I had to give my lunch back.
Well,
in
defense of our assessor, he has, I think, done more than anyone else that I know of in the way of identifying savings, doing more with less. So on each of these things, you want to make sure that we consider their track record. It is a variety. Some departments underspend their budgeted amount with a great track record. Other ones spend every dollar they get. And right now we're treating them all the same. We keep giving them the same. And I would like to be able to ensure that everyone is that we're being as realistic as we can and as informed as we can when it comes to using the budget capacity in a way that makes the most sense. Doesn't do us any good if we have lots of extra cash sitting in the bank above our needs if we're not applying it.
It's not cash.
Excuse the term, it's reserve.
Budget authority.
It's fund, it's sitting there. It's capacity.
Okay, all right.
I want to make sure that we save the right amount and that we use the right amount for the highest priority purposes, and we don't just simply have this slush some departments that could be applied better.
You know, the Indy 500 is 200 laps. I think we're on lap 199. I got it. Do we have any other subjects we want to talk
okay.
about today?
In other words, let's move
I
on.
I do.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not that thick-skulled.
I have one more.
Can I say one thing about just popped in my head about this too, and you guys probably know this, but just thinking as a department head, one thing to remember, because we just got done talking about the reserve. So we've got, what, 24, we aim for 24, 23 million in the reserve. I think one thing to keep in mind as you look at these, and again, some of them probably have been vacant for too long, but if I was a department head, and Mark's been there, so he can correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think they have the opportunity to build into their budget a reserve. But there's still that fear there, because statutorily you cannot overspend your budget, right? And so if I was a department head and I had a department of 100 people, I don't think it would be uncommon for me to budget and look forward into the year and say, you know, we're going to leave that OA position or that assessor position vacant, and, you know, because I want to protect myself. I don't have a dedicated reserve account, but I know that $60,000 in salary savings is going to be there if somebody goes over with overtime. So I think that's probably common with some of these positions.
No, that's a very good point, because when I was a department director and we had the cuts, I cut my controllable budget down to, so there was this much margin for error. And there are times when controllable budget can cover you if you have a salary overage. And, you know, I also want to say that people who use every penny of their salary and benefits budget, it's not because they didn't manage correctly. If every one of your positions is filled and somebody retires in November and cashes out sick leave and vacation, that's a huge hit to your budget right at the end of a budget cycle, and it can cause you to go over budget, which is why Adriana creates contingencies to bail out people who have an unfortunate series of events like that.
That's what they're for.
So, I think we got to be careful about labeling people heroes and losers just because they spent 92% or 75%.
Yeah, I'm going to get off into that. I like our department to think that if they've spent their budget and something causes them to go over, that they could face up and say, you know, I went over my budget because blah, 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 I need $20,000.
Yeah.
There wouldn't be a bat of our eye. You
right.
know, we
yeah,
would take
not
care
because
of
I was irresponsible, but because
yes,
something
yeah,
happened.
And that's always going to happen. So, but it does give us a better feel of what the budget is. So, can I move on?
Yeah, got another item. Is it one like the
and
one
and where that's
about?
Going to go as an action item is the conversations for to increase understanding is going to happen, right? That's not my plate.
I'll work with Mark.
I assume it's on yours too, right,
yeah,
Mark?
We'll figure it out.
With a smile.
Okay, yeah. Great. That's good.
We're down to the last minute, I believe, on a contract with Humane Society. And we probably should have been addressing this over the last 6 months, because in our last meeting with the Humane Society, we took a one big gulp and stepped up and paid their $175 per critter. And we now have the RFP, I guess. When I visited the Humane Society, they told me that they were going to make up the RFP. But this appears that this is our
yes.
RFP. So, because we were concerned about it before, and because there's an increase in this, and I saw that in the proposed budget, I don't think it's even going to be allowed, but in the proposed budget of $125,000 to the animal control people, I'm guessing that is to pay the Humane Society the increase, because I think this year it goes to $200 per critter. And with that in mind, the RFP should have been discussed before we got this far, because our intent was to have other shelters around the county to be able to bid on sheltering animals. But if we drop an RFP that says that when you pick up the animal, you're going to bathe him and you're going to have a veterinarian examine him and we're going to neuter him and so on, that drives the cost up of handling the animals.
What's in the RFP is what's required by law. The services when animals are apprehended, and Chris can help me out here. There are certain standards that must be achieved when you have animals apprehended by animal control. And very, very few facilities around the county can meet the requirements. And we had this discussion in 2013 at the end of the year. And
that's when we probably should have had it before the last minute. You're just going to roll over and step up for another $125,000.
Well, that's what staff is recommending to the board, and we're going to bring this to you and ask you to enter into
it. It goes up again next year, too.
We're going to bring it to the board and ask you to enter into a new contract for 3 years with the Humane Society, and you can elect to do that or not.
2 years?
Pardon?
Whatever, 2 years.
This is a painful process. I don't want to do it every 2 years. I want to do it every three.
So would you send me the RCWs that tell us how we're supposed to maintain or handle or treat at shelters? Because I know that we have shelters all around the county that take care of animals. I'm sure they're not breaking the law.
Okay. Certainly. There are both short and longer term. But, yeah, let me just, without saying more,
I think our term is under 5 days.
The answer is I will absolutely be glad to send all three counselors. What I'll try and do is break it down, and without going into great detail about each one, I'll just create a memo that that generally outlines the process, the statutes, and then we'll give you an idea of what we would have to engage in for the county to start business if we chose to.
Okay.
Right. Or if we want to hire contracts with private providers.
The intent was we have at least another half a dozen that could compete in the bidding process, and we don't have that now.
We invited them to submit proposals.
Well, it depends what you put in here. If you expect them to bathe them and reworm them and neuter them, they're not set up.
Okay, once you get the materials from Chris, then we can talk again.
I will. I've got it on my list, or I'm writing.
All right. That's all I had.
Thank you.
I've got something. yesterday, this regards the comprehensive plan update, the preferred alternative, alternative four. Yesterday, I introduced some updates and some potential revisions and posted them on the grid without expecting to take any action because it was too late to try to take action. But certainly the intent behind that was to introduce it to the board last minute. It's too early to take any action on it. Got that. But it was the forum was there. The appropriate forum was there. The topic was the comprehensive plan topic was front and center. So that was introduced. And I just want to ensure that we have an understanding that my intent was to introduce it to my commissioners, to the potential partners, the jurisdictions, to the community, for the purpose of welcoming feedback, welcoming comment from each of them, welcoming comment from my colleagues, welcoming public comment, and also from staff. I understand if there's anything we want to do that we need to do and go above and beyond the minimum, and that is to follow public process. And that public process is to be inclusive, collaborative, involving, welcoming feedback, and say, here it is, turn on the lights, here are the potential options that we could consider for potential adoption on November 24. So we didn't vote on that. And I'm not proposing that we do vote on that at this point. But I do believe it's appropriate for us to be able to, for me to share this and see if whether or not there's support by this board, because I'm only one. I don't speak for the board. I can't speak for the board. But if this board welcomes that opportunity, it welcomes the public feedback from all of those stakeholders and our citizens on that topic, that we ought to say so today.
Well, I think it's important. I think it's important that we have all the information we can. I didn't think you needed to read it to us, but I thought it was all good information. And just like an email we get from constituents, who still are in giving us input and direction and opinions, that we need to consider that also.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I would like to have it a little bit more clear as to where you got the information from that explains the accuracy of it. Because one of the things we've learned here recently is that the numbers we get from OFM are like 3 years old, and that created part of our problem, I think.
Actually, one of the reasons, first of all, I apologize for introducing that at the last minute. If you look at the time stamps on some of those files, they're like 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning. I wish I had more time in the day, like many of us do. And so it's not my practice or intent to introduce things at the last minute. However, without having the confidence that a solid evidence base undergirds the decisions for us going forward, I think we could make some serious mistakes. And it took me that long to pull together that documentation. And those documents, actually, if you look at each of the graphs and each of the graphics and each of the points, there is a line that says source colon, and there's a link that shows exactly where all of that data comes from. It's well documented in there, because it cannot be opinions, it cannot be just simply views. It needs to be established, credentialed, certifiable source information from the authoritative source,
that is
on there. And the electronic versions of that, those should be clickable links, so you can go to it and say, "Yep, there it is." So, do we have a consensus here that we welcome that feedback and we want to hear from the community concerning those updates, those options?
Clear to me what those options are. Are you adding those to alternative four? It's instead of?
It's not instead of.
Is it a separate?
No.
Proposal?
No. All of this process is integrated so that the basis for these decisions, the assumptions that make them up, the components that make it, the ingredients that make up the potential preferred alternative, are tied together. And as we've communicated, or at least I've communicated in each of these public meetings that I can recall, I've used three words: make it better. That's the expectation that I gave to the people who have weighed in on this, in order to ensure that their time was well spent. We listened, and we don't want to presume that we're in a box and we have to have everything in the box and nothing can be made better. It's not a rigid all or nothing, throw out the whole thing or as it was, or somehow apply that insight that came from the concerns expressed in the EIS and the concerns expressed by the mayors that came and testified, the concerns that were expressed by the citizens. I believe that they had a valid expectation that we were going to do something useful with that feedback, and not just simply to throw out all or nothing, but instead to make it better. So I have done the best that I can do in order to respect that feedback and to apply the revisions as best I can, but I do not speak for the board. I can just offer that to the board and welcome your feedback and welcome the feedback from all the others I've listed there, so that we can know whether or not those make sense.
So what you offered yesterday was some new information and some changed information.
It was revisions, for instance, if you want some itemizations.
Okay, I don't, because I'm trying to zoom out to the big picture. What do you, staff will have to write the final findings and report. So what do you expect staff will do with this new information?
Well, first of all, the staff is a resource for getting this job done. But the responsibility falls to us to define the criteria and the specifics in order to make sure that the policies that we are defining, our decisions are policy-based, and staff translates those into specifics that are consistent with those policies.
What do you expect staff to do with the new information and the new proposals?
The what has been posted on the grid, that information.
Are you expecting them to incorporate it into a new report, or I mean, are you assuming that the what you offered yesterday is that it's not information for staff, or it's nothing for staff to do, but it's your opinion of just what needs to be in the report, the final report?
It is not just information. This is what we're talking about is a plan, a 20-year comprehensive plan update that has specifics and criteria, and these what I submitted yesterday was revisions and updates that
of what
of the assumptions of how we account for each of the parcels, and especially in the rural areas, to accommodate potential growth, population growth. Much of it has to do with that. The ensure that whatever basis we use going forward, that there are, that our assumptions aren't just pulled out of the air because we have some idealism of what the world ought to be, but instead we look at the actual, we base them upon the actual history of our own records that's consistent.
So all of those things that you think should be updated or changed over what we've previously seen force at least three of these, and there may be more, will require us to rewrite the report, resubmit it for an SEIS, because if we, when we change in a substantial way any of the assumptions or the population distribution,
okay.
So I'm trying to figure out how to ask staff what the impact, what they would need to do with this, and based on the information, to stay out of court, which is very expensive. Well, sometimes you have to do it, but not like when you guys came on board and was already in the middle. The lawsuit for GMA.
I got it in 2 months of it.
So
when you're done,
what I'm trying to do is figure out at what point there's actually going to be a discussion. Do you want to have the discussion among us first before it goes to the public hearing, and then staff can advise us after they read it, okay, this point, this point, this point, forces a new SEIS? Because whatever we do or submit or want to change can have implications on the process. I don't wish that was true. I think the whole GMA is out of bounds at the state level. I think we should be working to get state law changes regarding GMA. But right now we have what we have.
So I've kind of already addressed that with our staff. Cause one of the things that I was aware of is that when they first brought it to us,
No, I mean Mr. Medora's proposal.
Yeah, what he had in there,
well,
and
we
what he
just
submitted.
Need to be sure we're talking about the same thing.
What he submitted was two things that I saw: the difference in population and the difference in ratio. So when they brought that, when we first started off the process, and they brought that ratio, was going to work on that ratio, and that ratio was 87-13, mm-hmm. But they said, well, it doesn't matter because in that last comprehensive plan, we had 90-10. we just didn't make it. It was just a goal, a target to try to go to, which means that we were trying to direct our population 90% inside the urban growth boundary and 10% outside. It didn't happen that way. It was 87-13. But we said, well, we want to stay on target, so we're going to go back and make it 90-10 again. So what it was, I asked him, well, then the same thing with population. Did we meet or exceed the population that we reported to? He said, no, we didn't make that much because of the recession. I said, well, then it didn't make any difference then. And he said, that's right. And I said, so if we go back and reconsider that now or next year, does it call for anything else? And both Christy Cook and Oliver said, no, it does not.
Well,
that depends.
So let me ask this question. If after staff has time to read and understand and ask Mr. Mador questions about his proposal from yesterday, in conjunction with the whole thing that we have on the table, the whole update that we have on the table, and our planning staff comes back to us and says, if you make this change and this change and this change, then it's going to require a new SEIS.
That's what I was afraid of, and that's
well, if our staff, our professional staff, come back and tell us, if these are the changes you want to make, then we need to send it out for a new SEIS. Is that what we're going to do?
I don't want to go back out for another SEIS.
Can I answer that, please? First of all, staff is very important in this process. However, they are not the ones to require us to go out and do an SEIS or anything like that. Our prosecuting attorney's office, that is their call to inform us as to what threshold we need to be able to stay under in order to ensure that we don't have to start all over again or trigger major processes that will somehow set us back when it comes to meeting the deadlines and accomplishing something useful. We welcome their feedback, we welcome their views and their opinions, but they're advisory to us when it comes to us having the responsibility to make the call. Chris, you've been very helpful. You kept us on track yesterday of what to do, what not to do during that meeting, and we'll continue to look to you to ensure that whatever steps we take forward, it's the appropriate, proper steps that will accomplish fulfilling all of the necessary processes within the law. So the question is, whose responsibility is this, and whose authority needs to be exercised in order to get this done? Who's leading? And it's my assertion that it is our responsibility to lead, because these are policy decisions. Staff does not make policy. We make policy. That's our responsibility. When it comes to the process to do that, we look to staff to help us to get that right. And Mark, we really look to you to help us to get that right. One of the worst things that can happen is we can show up at a public meeting with expectations because we haven't communicated well enough what we hope to do, and then find out we can't do that, or we haven't somehow accomplished some role to that should have been done had we communicated better. When November 24 comes, I think it would be such a disservice to the citizens if we were to have our hands tied and have the inability to provide a optimized solution for the 20 years that's going to affect their lives because somehow we didn't communicate well enough, or staff is on a different wavelength, or we're on a different wavelength. We need to work together as a team, and it is my goal not to meddle with anything we don't have to meddle with. not to exceed some threshold to change something that's going to trigger some major process. However, there's we got two extremes here. One is we change so much that we start all over again. Don't want to do that. The other is we just simply say it's locked in the concrete and we can't change a thing. Neither one of those are balanced. The balance is in the middle, is make it better, follow the process, and fulfill the process so we can never be accused of somehow skipping important steps and not fulfilling the process requirements. We need to be able to have applied the input so we don't throw away all the hours of testimony that came from citizens and from jurisdictions. We need to be able to somehow ensure that we can move forward with a plan, a realistic plan that's based on realistic assumptions, that stands up to ground truth. That's my goal. And we need to be able to, we need everybody's understanding and cooperation in order to get that accomplished.
So, Tom, you understand that if you change the distribution of the population over the assumption that you already created and approved, that may cause city jurisdictions to have to go back and redo their plan.
No,
that's not our call, and that's our opinion. Doesn't matter.
Let me answer the question.
Chris does.
No, it wasn't. At first, Oliver says if we change that ratio, we'd have to go back to the cities and they would have to reduce their urban growth boundary. And when I questioned it and challenged it because I had the history of what happened before, when we didn't meet those goals, nothing was changed. We did 87-13 with what we ended up with on our growth. So all it is a target. But sometimes if you don't go back and adjust it when you can, it could come back and say, well, because you didn't adjust this, you can't do alternative 2 or 4.
Chris, can you weigh in on this? The question is, can we make some revisions that are reasonable and stay below a threshold that, or do we have to just simply say all or nothing, you can't change anything?
Okay, let me try. There's been no less than a dozen different possible questions that you've started and asked me that I try to keep track of from whose obligation. Well, let me start out with whose obligation is it to prepare and present the comprehensive plan, to the role of the board in adopting the comprehensive plan. So I'll start out and say that the charter makes the obligation the county managers to prepare and present it to the planning commission. That comes right out, almost word for word, right out of the charter. And then it's the board's obligation to adopt it. What I've said in the past, and I'm sure you've heard me say it 2 or 3 times, is that that's not a one-time process. Given the importance of it, the charter has to assume that there will be an ongoing relationship between the council and the county manager. So that's my attempt to talk about that one issue. With regard to CEPA review and environmental reviews, when you do, generally speaking, when you undertake an environmental review, you're required to readdress that review when there is a change in the planner proposal that brings into question whether or not the initial analysis continues to be accurate. And at such time as there's a question about whether it continues to be accurate, then you have to readdress that. The problem is neither CEPA nor GMA is written in some kind of an objective fashion that says when you add 10 people, that's inconsequential. When you add 100, that's significant. So the difficulty in answering your question with regard to this is that, getting to your point, counselor, when you talk about assumptions, the OFM number has a significant impact. As we heard, the cities aren't just concerned about the number of people that are in the county. They're concerned about what the impact is of development in the rural area and the ultimate areas that will become parts of the city and what they're going to be left with to deal with incorporating those boundaries within their city and how that will melt or merge with their comprehensive plans and their future plans for the city. So they are concerned about that, and they testify. So in trying to decide whether or not changes that you make in your assumptions will require this matter to go back through some or all of these processes is going to be to require some analysis about the significance of the change and the impact it has. For example, your OFM numbers have impacts on a number of different things. They have impacts not only on the population projections that you ultimately get. They may have impacts on the size of the cities. They may have impacts on the size of the rural area. The development and the character of the rural area, they'll have certainly an impact on your capital facilities plan. The significance of that all depends on how big those numbers are, and so they don't really, they really defy an easy answer of yes, you're there, or no, you're not. The answer is if it is significant, then you do have to readdress these issues. And the only clear cases that come out of SEPA are the ones that will tell you about the point at which you're required to reanalyze or readdress your environmental review, and they're written in the context that I've described. So there are some issues out there. I can tell you that the court has said on the one hand a de minimis change does not require reengaging environmental review. I can tell you that they say on the other hand a significant change does require you to reengage and reconsider your environmental review. Sure. The question in any particular case is how significant is that change? Mm-hmm. The issues that the counselor has described has been regarding OFM numbers that aren't fixed in stone. I think he said that. The same is true about the urban-rural split in the population projections. And so to try and, oh, and then the other assumptions, which maybe actually be a little more significant. Some of the assumptions that that you had about what properties were determined to be developable or not developable may be or may not be significant, again, depending on which ones you adopt and go forward with. So there's a whole lot of things that were discussed, and, of course, a lot of questions you've raised. But I think I hope I've given you a flavor for how I think a court would begin to look at this. And then I'm glad you can go into more detail later.
And Chris, all along you have provided us good counsel. We continue to look to you for the path from here and going forward, especially between whatever needs to happen between now and November 24. If there are steps that we need to take to ensure we've followed enough process, we've got enough feedback, everyone has had the opportunity to weigh in, that... make sure we're not left in the dark. Make sure that we have every opportunity to know what those are and they have every opportunity to accomplish those. Know this, that the introductions of that material yesterday, if you look at where, for instance, the population projections, realistic projections were, I did not advocate that we change them. Instead, I presented it in for consideration. And know that what I am not doing is to somehow advocate to change the urban growth boundaries, to somehow impose a different population upon the cities, not at all. Instead, it's to ensure that a reasonable plan is based on reasonable assumptions.
Yeah, and I never said anything that you did. In fact, I think I acknowledged
yes.
that you didn't make any particular
yes.
Conclusion in that regard.
And rather than certainly... The analysis that has been, the numbers and the significance of all the metrics that were involved in our notebook, our SDEIS, those numbers were huge. And I'm not advocating that we increase them. I'm advocating instead, advocating is an overstatement. I'm saying that we should consider the more reasonable assumptions that actually shows the realistic planning of what we expect to happen is much less. It's not much more. It's a lesser impact when we actually look at what can reasonably be expected to likely develop, and that we should pay attention to that. Otherwise, we end up with a plan that is not realistic because the assumptions that it's based on is not realistic. So the idea is to stay away from some trigger, some threshold that says, you stepped over the line too much. And also to say, well, you're stuck in the mud, you can't make anything better. But instead, the proposal that we should consider is somehow to apply what revisions are sensible and are appropriate that we can do to stay within those boundaries.
Well, I can't answer that question until the council decides how they're going to go forward with regard to those items that were presented.
And I'm saying I would consider all of them, but I need these put in the framework of the plan and feedback from the staff on, okay, this proposal, this could be considered significant. This may trigger something. And then we can look at that and say, okay, then maybe we want to adjust that so it doesn't run the same risk. But from the people who do the planning all the time, to I'd like for them to give me a report on what it means to add what Mr. Medora offered yesterday. What does this mean to the process and the plan? Which things might kick this into requiring an SEIS? And they may even have suggestions about how it can be modified. So our job is the policy side, mm-hmm. but the people that are experienced with the framework and the outcome, I'd like them to be appropriately involved mm-hmm. in an advisory capacity mm-hmm. to us about what it means.
Yes.
And then a report on that, and included in the report, if we go with this, what does this mean for our plan process and our timelines?
Well, I can tell you at a minimum, again, I'll say it again because it's important, what the council, I don't think Mr. Medora presented any single answer to those questions or conclusion about which way to land. He didn't pick a particular OFM projection. He didn't pick a particular set of exactly what assumptions should be changed. At some point, that does need to be decided upon because that will help us to. We need to know that to know the significance of the change.
So you're saying that some of what's offered is generic in the sense that it's not specific enough for staff to maybe do an analysis?
Well, I think it can. I understand that these, to some extent, are foundations upon which a lot of the remaining plan are built.
Exactly.
And they will have impacts. They may have impacts in more than one and certainly in probably many different places. Again, depending on how significant they are, they may not be a big deal. The fact that a brick is red versus an orange-brown may not matter when you're looking at the color of the building. But it may be entirely different depending on whether it's a different size. And so what we need to do is look at what the range of things the board wants to consider, and then we're in a better position to give you an analysis. At a minimum, we know, however, and I'm sure it's aware that the council's aware, that you will have to go out and get public input on this. And that part of it, we know no matter what happens, is going to have to occur. But all of this is a little premature until some of the range of options that the council may consider as a result of these two additional documents is boiled down into the most likely options that you, if you want to consider it at all, what the most likely range of options is so staff can give you an answer. Otherwise, we're guessing.
And for me, that's difficult because I can read something and not have adequate enough broad spectrum knowledge to say, yeah, sure, let's go ahead with this, unless I can talk to staff and say, what are the implications of this?
The assumptions are what define the impacts of each alternative. And so if it's the will of the council to direct Oliver to do something with these assumptions and then bring back to council what the impacts will be under each of the four alternatives, which is, I think, what I'm hearing. Yeah, maybe you need a work session on the assumptions. What assumptions are
You can say something?
You said something along that line. there's so much that we're asking questions. I would suggest that we have another work session with Oliver and have him bring forward what he has. We haven't seen but a fraction of what is supposed to be the comp plan. I know at one time they said that we had to put trails and parks in the plan. Well, then I find out that we do, and staff says we don't. I pull up RCW, it says we don't. Same with the transportation. All of that, I'd like to see what he's coming forward with so we could just discuss that part of it and then see if we're off and running. I think the front leading part of this is really important. It's like getting it off the ground and then seeing what we're going to attach to it along the way.
Mm-hmm. I would, Chris, you used the term that we have to go back out to get public input. That's like having to eat dessert. I like that. It's not having to.
No.
I don't mean to imply that was negative.
I wanted to make clear that at a minimum is something that is required.
Yes.
So if that's
and I don't mean to mischaracterize that. You put a positive spin on it. That's good. My goal is to make it even more positive. I want to get the input. It's a good thing. It's something I look forward to. So it's not a got to. It's a get to. I would say also, we've been talking as though what was presented yesterday was very, very general, and we hardly know what it means. It's kind of like so nebulous. In reality, please don't confuse the two different things. One is that I did not advocate that this is what the board needs to do. Instead, what I did is I was put very specific function or assumptions that were very, very specific, itemized one by one by one, and said we should consider them. I also put the included in the documentation are tables with very specific exact numbers in each table that have and those are not standing alone. All of those come from the maps that are also the source of those that are also posted on the grid that was also an integral part of that. All of that basis going forward is what needs to be considered in order for us to adopt a plan that is realistic and appropriate. So there's a difference. Because I'm not saying I'm insisting that we do this, don't characterize that as being very, very general. We don't know what we're talking about. Instead, the very specific exact maps, exact assumptions, exact tables that are there for our consideration. And also what I shared with yesterday is that the numbers do not agree between what those what was published in the DEIS and what the VBLM model creates, and the methodology that I used in order to transfer the map parcels to the compiled data. And the staff's role in helping to identify what needs to be brought into a known good truth-telling accuracy, that's critical, and that's ongoing now. So the main thing right now is that to express to the community that this is not us telling you this is what we're going to do, but instead this is saying, here, community, we listened. Here's what we think what you wanted. We want your feedback before we put the cake in the oven. Help us to get it right. Please give us your feedback, not only the community, but the staff and the other representatives in the other jurisdictions. So the work session, I think, is a really good idea because we need to, if we're going to do anything, we need to over-communicate on this. We need to make sure that we got more than enough conversation going. Because I don't want this to somehow be characterized that this is a single source and it's not welcoming input. It's exactly the opposite.
7 days.
I hope that we have open houses on this. I hope that we welcome the feedback and work with work sessions. And I hope that we do everything we can for the citizens to help us to know, help us to get this right and get it optimized.
So, instead of having this continue as a workshop, how many days notice do we need to give for a work session?
24. It's an open public meeting.
24 hours?
But we need to give staff time to know that we're going to be asking
them. I just want them to bring up what they have so far. There's a half, a third, or a fourth. I want to see those other things. Because there's some other things in there that we had additional information on also.
Maybe change some other things,
and
too?
We have a parks plan, and we have a road plan, and we have a healthy community plan.
Yep.
Those don't have to be attached to the comprehensive plan. They are a plan within itself that needs to go forward to be submitted, but not part of it.
You mean the non... is it non-mandated parts of the...
Yeah, I would suggest...
That could be a whole different topic.
I was going to say just that. And that's, to me, a fairly simple process. It's almost like a toggle switch.
Exactly.
This one goes, this one doesn't. This one goes, this one doesn't.
Yes.
Quick, simple. Mm-hmm. The issue at hand, though, is this complex issue on the...
Of maps and...
Updated, improved... Alternative 4 and the discussion we have to have about planning assumptions.
Yeah.
I think we need to package that up and take that on separately.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then we got plenty of time to flip the toggle switches.
That's the thing, is that, Chris, when you look at reverse engineer back up the clock from November 24 and say what needed is to happen in order for us to fulfill public process. Is there some kind of notice requirements?
Or it's me. 24
hours. We just want to make sure we don't ever get to the point where we're going to, and here's what the board wants to do at that point, and we get a heads up, I'm sorry you can't do that because we didn't prepare. I want to make sure we are really prepared and our community is embracing whatever we do.
Let me turn that around, because I'm glad to help answer your question, but I need you to help me to help. So in to do that, seriously, I'm not taking that lightly, but you've got your two documents. If we put those out to the public...
And the maps.
And the maps, and we put those out to the public, what are we going to expect them, what are you going to ask them to...
What are we telling them they are?
Well,
they're on the grid.
I could maybe dream up or come up with an answer, but I think I understand them. I mean, I'm not proposing, I don't. But that's not as much my problem, even if I can label them. My question is, what the public has to know what you're asking them to comment upon. Mm-hmm. What is the goal at the end that they're trying to use this document to decide whether it makes them closer to where they want to be or farther? Yeah. And we need to be able to explain to them so that they can intelligently comment.
Yes.
And so to some extent, the board still needs to guide us to let us know what's going to happen with these. Are they all going to go? You want to assume that they're all going forward? Should they assume that part of them? Are we just going to assume that the OFM is going to be considered, but we don't know whether it's going up or down?
Well, first of all, I don't want to have a foregone conclusion that this is what we're going to do. Instead, it's what we are considering in a way that's tangible enough and specific enough for to be able to people to get their hands on, and yet to be able to know that we're listening, and this is not just for the sake of going out there to listen and then throw it away, but it's to listen and for us to be able to either hopefully we'll have a vote of confidence instead of a vote of incompetence from whatever that term, the opposite term is, for us for us to be able to know we're on the right track. Or not. And I don't presume to know that we as a board or I am on the right track. I want to hear from the citizens that these are their properties, this is their future, this is their land. Have we got it right? Is there a consensus out there that they agree. And, but you're right to the point, Chris, in that so much of it up to this point has been fragmented. The individual components are still sitting in the measuring cups. We've got two eggs over here and a half a cup of sugar over here, and we haven't blended them together into a recipe. I think it's our responsibility to blend that recipe and say, here it is, in a concise way. I feel like we all have that responsibility. We each take leadership in the different projects and tasks that are there, and I've signed up to is consider it my responsibility to help lead in this one. So here's one of three cooks that I feel like it's, yes, the definition needs, could be more clear, and I'd be very happy to help bring some clarity for the sake of us knowing what that recipe looks like.
Well, just to try and summarize, if the council is going to propose a work session for next week,
I'll say next week's too soon.
Well, the only problem is that you can't give, I don't know if you can give notice to the public until after that work session is done. I mean, we can do that, but I'm not sure what benefit or what you're going to achieve if you just tell, if you just put these documents out there without giving a better, some better guidance to the public about how they're to not necessarily interpret, but how they should be applied in the context of our plan.
But those aren't the only things that's being considered.
True.
It's all the things that we're bringing up along with this.
Absolutely.
So this is just one more thing. And to say we'd have to note that would be the same thing as that when I get an email from constituents and they have suggestions, that I would submit that to and then go public notification. I don't think we need to do that. We just give a concept of what we're going to be talking about, putting the ingredients together and seeing how they fit.
Mm-hmm. I think you just need a work session to compare the assumptions.
Yes.
The ones that you proposed the other day versus the original staff ones.
And the ones that we've had
many years ago.
We've had some other stuff come up along the way.
Okay.
So
that's what I would do.
Good.
We have several things on board here. We have the maps and the documents submitted yesterday.
Yes.
We have no staff analysis or no staff summary of what that is. I don't understand what all of them are. I need to know, as a summary, how does our staff view, not their opinion, yes or no, but how do they view and what are the implications? That's one set of information. We haven't said, yes, we accept that. Yes, we want that to go forward as a council.
That's right.
I may or may not want to do that. I want to be fair. I want to get a staff analysis of what the sum total of that means in broadly and with some specifics and what the implications of it are. Then I would know if I think we should incorporate that and be considering it as alternative 4.5 or whatever.
It's still alternative 4.
Don't say 5.
Don't say 5.
Well, so then, Tom, I hear you indicating that there may be other tweaks you're interested in, too.
No, they're already being done. As Oliver brings them up forward, too, I want to see what Oliver's putting in.
So now I understand. So you're talking about the non-required parts of the plan and some of those other things that we're going to be looking at.
Some aren't.
And okay. So so good. Then it's a little bit more simple.
Okay.
Then I'd like to have us, we can do it in a board meeting, I guess.
So.
Well, is a board meeting public enough? What I would want to do is have the counselors get the staff report and read it and say, yeah, you know, I think there's some stuff in here we should go forward with. Or we should, you know, we agree that this is the direction we should be going.
I'd like to do that at the workshop. So it could be new to us, and they're going to bring some new stuff up.
Well, it could be done. It could be done at a workshop. That's a public meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And then agree if it requires it if we're going to send it to the Planning Commission.
Oh, it's not done yet.
Huh?
It's not done yet.
Well, we don't know yet if the implications are such it would have to go back to the Planning Commission.
Not my opinion.
That's where the opinion of our prosecuting attorney is the authority. It's not staff, it's not us, it's our prosecuting attorney.
Well, whoever advises us.
They've already advised us.
That has that authority.
Yeah, with that one step. I was surprised it went to the Planning Commission already, because that's just one little part of it.
Yeah.
If you want their opinion on it, it has to go up in its entirety, so they give their opinion on the entirety of it. We're hardly getting started on this, then they give their opinion of one little aspect of it and didn't mean a whole lot. But it did, it went back to readdress the same things that we met when we met with the cities and we talked about the urban growth boundaries and the additional acreage and whatnot. That's all they addressed about. That's all they talked about. So I was surprised. Hopefully we'll get farther in our workshop.
So normally, I would think, anything that comes in this late, after we already have an SEIS, after it's already been to the Planning Commission, the door should be closed on it. That would have been my initial thinking. Mm-hmm. But I don't like to take unreasonable positions. And if there's something in here that is beneficial, in more than one counselor's opinion,
there was,
and should be incorporated in the update, I would want to be open-minded about looking at it, even though it kind of screws up the process. I mean, well, the calendar, the timing of the approval and everything. I'm willing to do the work on it once I get information I need to understand what it is.
Now, I think there's a gentleman who testified there, and he is confused as to the input time. And Oliver, I believe, told him, you can submit emails to us, but the public notification, I think, is cut off.
Well, what he distinguished between was comment on the draft supplemental EIS. So he distinguished between comments on the, well, I'll call it the environmental document. He distinguished comments on the environmental document from comments on the broader comprehensive plan. Because the comprehensive plan is ongoing, we can always, or for a long time, we'll be able to continue to receive comments on the comp plan. But comments on the draft environmental document are closed. So that's the distinction he drew.
Chris, I assume that the reason that we have a draft SEIS is for us to be able to have received all that input,
right,
for us to consider that input, and for us to then ensure that the final SEIS has the right kind of changes or updates that has that discovery process has provided. In other words, if the numbers analyzed in there turn out to be bogus because we end up, or because inappropriate, unrealistic, that they should, because staff agrees that they made a mistake, or some other reason that we're not stuck with old, known, obsolete numbers in the FEIS, but we have the freedom and the responsibility to ensure that those appropriate corrections are made.
If there are truly errors in the document, well, let me first agree with you. The process is exactly that. I won't go into the authorship because we've hired a consultant to do this to maintain its objectivity. But as to the corrections, it's absolutely true that the draft document is intended to receive comments, analyze those comments, report on them, and then determine what changes, if any, are necessitated or required, and then to put together a final document.
Mm-hmm.
If there are errors in the document, my belief, although I haven't looked, but my belief is that those are still able to be corrected.
Mm-hmm.
So for errors, truly things that we have the wrong address, we have the wrong number, we transpose digits, whatever those are, if there are truly errors, then yeah, they should be corrected.
Well, when I say those are kind of nebulous numbers, metrics.
Well, that's why I tried to use ones that were easy to explain.
It's safe. But I'm talking in particular about, for instance, the number of lots. If the if there are over 12,000 lots that we presume that Alternative 4 created, and we have updated our assumptions and incorporated the feedback, the concerns, and now reduced the number of lots as realistic planning for the future, that it would be inappropriate for the FEIS to stay with 12,000 lots when all indications from staff and from policy says those are inappropriate. The real numbers are some other.
Mr. Chair, we're going into the work session here, and we need to move on.
Yeah, you have to be careful. You may be arguing against yourself because you want to argue the assumptions aren't significant, and your statement just seemed to say that they're very significant. They changed the number.
Don't go back and explain them again.
No, I'm just talking about process, Chris.
Okay.
So
we won't need a workshop after this.
Always warn me if I'm arguing against myself, okay?
A little schizophrenia.
Okay.
An objection.
I object to my remarks. All right. Well, thank you. So at this point, it sounds like we need a little more definition for proposed recipe. My homework's not done. I am still committed to help fill in gaps, and a work session is appropriate. Yeah, everybody's working.
A carrot cake or some other kind?
Okay.
Okay.
Where's that list?
Okay. You don't get another one.
No, I don't have any more.
Did you have any?
No.
Very emphatically.
Please.
Okay. Mark off Jeannie. Jeannie, you're done.
Peter, you have anything?
Yeah.
Mark?
I hope you are, too.
Yeah,
I'm
good. I would just like to...
I'll be quiet.
No, you can't do that.
The goodbyes are so hard.
Yeah, good luck.
It's not goodbye. It's just till next time.
When's your last day?
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Yep.
So you gonna call in sick?
Yeah. I got some sick time on.
No, we're taking them out to lunch, and we got to celebrate.
Well, that way you can't call
Sunday
in sick.
Tomorrow, golf day.
Yeah, it might be sick.
So, Mr. Wasak Resource Man, we will make sure that you give us your direct phone number when you get up.
Yeah, I
don't change yourself.
I might just call in here on Wednesdays to give you guys,
All right.
Make sure Chris is all right.
Axel, I want to thank you again. I'm very grateful for everything and all the work you've done for us and getting David Rogers off my back.
Well, he's back on your back starting Friday.
I got to say, Peter has taken on projects that were unpopular, difficult, and not only did them, he has, quite frankly, for your benefit, been willing to give answers that weren't always easy, and sometimes, giving an honest answer can be particularly difficult. But he really gave his best, and I've always been grateful for the opportunity to listen to him argue repeatedly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good job, Axel.
The depth, his alertness to what's going on in the community as a whole, and his alertness to detail that has been extremely beneficial to the county, that he's picked up on things that have allowed us to put ourselves in a better position and in more than one case.
Well,
and
Tesoro.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's the one that picked up on the pipeline.
Mm-hmm. And other. Mm-hmm. So he's done a great job. I'm going to even miss you.
Yeah.
Remember where we work.
I will have to visit. I'll be around.
Are we going
to
keep your office open?
Yeah. I don't know. It's up to you and Mark.
And that's a Wasak. We've made an agreement with them that if ever you're under discipline or punishment, they're going to send you to a Wednesday board time.
Yeah. That'll be regular.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay. Is there anything else?
No, but I think we're having an executive session. Yes, ma'am.
Oh, yeah.
5 minutes.
Right. We'll adjourn here shortly.
Yeah.
But we'll have to reconvene to close out board time once the executive session is over.
Yeah, in a bio break. Just
bio
before,
break, yeah.
Yeah, before our executive session. So, okay, so we are adjourning from this.
We're recessing.
Recessing from this. Okay, make sure a more appropriate word. for personnel matters to be considered in the executive session.
Okay.
And we'll come back, and how long do you think?
20 minutes.
20 minutes. That'll be,
so you got
that'll be 5 after 4 if we have a 5-minute break.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
So I'm going offline.